Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, here we are for episode 32 of Digital Divinations.
Hooray!
Yeah, you know, we're in the 30s. That's pretty exciting. Once we get to 50, I think that's going to be kind of a big deal. But now it's like, we're slowly getting there, but it's not a huge deal yet.
Well, you've done a lot more, so looking around into podcasts and things. Where do we become, like... Where is 50 where we celebrate? I know in comic books, right? If a comic run gets to an issue 100, right? That's a big deal. Like, we've gotten 100 sort of issues. What's the podcast big deal?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of podcasts are weekly, and we're bi-weekly with this. So I think the 100 episode point for a typical weekly would be a pretty big deal. It's basically, it means you've been doing it for 2 years.
2 years, yeah.
So I think for us, when we get to 50, that'll be our 2 year point. That'll feel pretty substantial, but I still think 100 is, you know, if we get to 100, I think that's, we have survived each other for 4 years. That's a big deal.
Worth celebrating, definitely.
Yes. So what'd you do this weekend? You were hard to get a hold of to schedule.
I was. I was actually out camping again. And we have taken our camper out for the first time this year. Got it kind of popped up and sort of all filled up with a weekend full of camping stuff. And then it turns out the area that we went to, which is a campsite we'd been to before, kind of off the side of Mount Rainier, it doesn't have any reception. So it's really a get away from it all sort of place. Or weirdly, my phone didn't have any reception. And then within a few hours of us leaving, I found out that my daughter's phone had reception all along, right? So she'd been texting her friends and so on, but I thought she'd just been just goofing around on a phone with no reception. I only just realized, oh, no, if something had happened, we'd have been able to get a hold of somebody, but... Instead, it was a really nice break. We've got a family member who's just moved into the area, and my wife spent the whole weekend helping her sort of get unpacked and moved in. And so it was just me and the kids out camping. It was great.
And you survived that okay with all of them, huh?
I did. So early on, my kids have realized that any sort of scratch or scrape rewards them with let me take care of that for you, right? Let me get that cleaned off with antibacterial stuff. We'll get a Band-Aid on it. So at some point, they're going to have to like realize, scrapes just happen and no big deal, but they're not there yet, right? They're, I'm going to go show dad. I just got scraped because I'll get all sorts of, poor kid. So anyway, every little scratch and scrape. And because, like I say, we've been to this place before, they knew the area and liked looking around it. And so they were braver than they would normally be because this is a place they were experienced with.
Neat. And did they get all scraped up? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, quite a lot. The further they go, the more likely they are to get scraped or they get braver, right? And so, maybe I will climb to the top of this rock thing that I didn't climb to the top of last time. Or, maybe I will try to see if I can get through that sort of dense hedge of brambles that I wasn't brave enough to get through last time. It was really good. It was really nice to have time away with the kids. How about yourself? What'd you do this weekend? Anything fun?
Well, unlike on Mount Rainier, it was kind of muggy here. So kind of warm and muggy, which, isn't bad. And out here in Camino, we actually get a good breeze, but with our, the ductless system we have in here, it actually has a dehydration would be bad.
Okay.
A dehumidifying section and air conditioning. So that wasn't bad at all. But the big thing is my wife has had this thing where she's redoing the backyard. Remember there's that deck that was back there that we took up?
Last I saw it was in pieces.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's gone. And now we have these big pieces of driftwood that we're using to frame a garden. And we just ordered 3,500 pounds of flagstone to make paths and patios back there. And it's coming tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And that was actually, this has been her big project for a while, because there's a lot of rocks and gravel and stuff she's been clearing out. And I've been doing some stuff, but not too much. I will be moving all the flagstone from our carport, because they won't be able to deliver it any closer, up the hill to the backyard.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what I'll be doing next weekend.
Well, I am now old enough that I know before doing any activity like that to take a bunch of ibuprofen, or as I call it, the old man candy, because that's what gets me through. Like if I go on a long run or some heavy yard work or something like that, I now kind of count on that.
Well, unfortunately, I can't take ibuprofen.
I know that's you're just going to have to suffer.
I'm just going to suffer. I'll take it easy. And we have a wagon for hauling things up. It's just going to be a lot of trips, because I was calculating each piece of flagstone that we have is about 50 pounds.
Ooh.
So, you know, she's thinking, oh, I can put 200 pounds in the wagon. I'm thinking,
no,
I don't think so. Maybe I don't think so.
Is it, so this is going to be, next weekend's going to be Father's Day. Are your kids going to be doing anything for you? Just calling to say hi or anything else?
Well, I think, so my oldest is fully vaccinated and is in Redmond. So I think we may actually be able to see her for the first time in a long time. My youngest is in Calgary moving to BC, and they haven't opened the border yet. We're hoping that, I think it's actually that next day, the 21st of June, is when they next evaluate whether or not they're going to open the border.
Ooh.
So if they do open it up, then we'll see her probably early August. Otherwise, it's going to be sometime in the fall after she's, you know, moved in and everything up in Vancouver.
How long? Wow. Well, if your oldest is coming, you can say, we're glad to see you. It's been a really long time. Here, carry these 50-pound flagstones back around the back of the...
Oh, yeah. She's not really good at that kind of stuff, you know? Her activity is... she actually works for Nintendo now, but her activity is video games.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's not... Outdoor stuff, you know, that sun burns, apparently, or something. I don't know. Oh, man. But today, I also, so it's not really part of the weekend, but something I've been doing. So I went in to do my one-year labs, because Wednesday is my one-year appointment post-transplant.
Okay, excellent. Wow. Yeah, we were doing that even, this is kind of fun. This is good to hear. Okay.
But the neat thing about it is this is when I get to go in. So at the one-year point, it's not like a chance, but it's more like, 95% of folks that their kidney survives the 1 year do really, really well, right? So that 1 year is a big threshold. But it's not like rolling a D20 and you have a 5% chance of it just failing. It's more, there's, you know, health issues, comorbidities and things like that, right? You know, so the fact that I've made it there basically without any issue is really good. And, you know, since our state is opening up at the end of this month, I'm going to be asking the team, what can I start being able to do? Am I going to be able to go to a game store and play games in person? I presume I'll be able to go to houses where other people are fully vaccinated. So I'm looking forward to that.
Right.
And then timing for they already said it looks like I can teach in the fall face to face, but what about conventions? You know, when's that going to happen? And so I'm kind of curious to see what boundaries they're going to set for me. Obviously, I'm allowed to do whatever I want to do, but I've been pretty much adhering 100% to what they say I should do, because I really I want this to be successful.
So whatever their advice is, you're going to follow. That is almost certainly going to require some explanation, because I think that unlike all of our listeners, probably, if you're talking to a medical professional and say, I want to play games in a game store, you might have to describe what's going on.
Right.
Or when you say a convention, they will think something very different in their mind about what like a medical convention might be.
Well, I think both of them still have lots of people and get together in rooms. So but I think being at a table and, you know, constantly talking in close proximity with other people, I don't know. I don't really know what the latest, how they're interpreting the CDC guidelines for transplant patients. That's kind of what I don't know now.
Yeah. Well, hearing what they have to say and taking into account the science is very important, very critical.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm excited to hear, you know, and see. And also the other thing is, you know, all my immunosuppressants, the anti-rejection drugs have side effects.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping, and typically this is when they start dialing them back a little bit at the 1 year point. So I'm hoping to get some of those. And one of them in particular really makes my blood glucose go pretty high. So I can't like have any sweets and stuff. I mean, I've been drinking only water for a year.
Oh boy.
Nothing else. So,
no lemonade or Coca-Cola or anything. You're
nothing.
Too sugary. Nothing.
Yes, because the sugar. Because the medication really puts me borderline diabetic. And mm-hmm. so in order to manage that without insulin, I'm just doing it all with diet. And I'm hoping they can dial back to that one medication so that I can actually have some sweets, you know, ice cream once in a while, things like that, you know.
Well, they might, but they might be gross, right? It's been a year. Your taste buds are all messed up too. You'd be like, oh, why do I've heard stories of people who've had to go off of sugars for a long period of time and they get back on them and their attitude is, ew, why does anybody have this? It's just overpoweringly, like sickeningly sweet. So it'll be interesting to hear if you've got either that that kind of reaction or a more, oh, at last kind of reaction.
Yeah, well, I've never been a sweets kind of person. I've been more like savory. My wife is the sweets person. And so this has actually worked out really well for her because I'm not having any sweets. And so there's no reason to have any around the house. And so she's been pretty happy with it. But there are some things, like I can't have things that have a lot of natural sugars either.
Oh. You know,
like certain fruits and things.
Like
and
apples. Those things,
well, apples are actually good. Apples have pectin in them, which actually help offset
really?
Natural sugars.
Okay.
Yeah, in your diet. That's why the whole apple a day. Who'd have known? You know. but there's other things that are really really sweet. You know, fruits that are really really sweet that I like, but I've had to stay away from those as well. And even juices, mm-hmm. you know, having to stay away just because the natural sugars in there are too strong.
Wow. Well, it'll be interesting to hear what they say. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It might be a nothing thing, but I'm hoping I get some. He's usually pretty interesting. I bring a whole list of questions and we go through them and it's usually pretty informative.
Oh, good. Good, good.
All right. Well, today I was thinking we would talk about loot. Now, one of our patrons had asked about loot prior to PaizaCon, and I thought we could discuss that and see different perspectives on it. I actually at PaizaCon, I also was watching one of the Ask the Dev panels about loot in APs.
Oh,
and so
okay.
I'm kind of curious about your perspective on how loot is treated now in game. And then I'm thinking, you know, I can understand the economy and things like that, especially for society play. But in APs, the balance of loot, and then taking that into homebrews, you know, how we might change it there. And I have some thoughts on that, but I want to get your take on how you feel about loot and how it's kind of calculated and distributed in adventures now.
Sure. Well, I've got two thoughts on that. One is my personal experience and personal preference. And my attitude in any kind of longstanding campaign is kind of what you find is what you use. And I know there are plenty of people who see any kind of loot drop as, all right, well, this is the bag of cash that I now can use to go buy the things that I really want, that they've looked at through the books. But I'm really of the attitude, it's like, all right, well, gosh, weird. If a hushing wire or a refractor perforator pistol has fallen into our possessions, what does that do? Oh, that's kind of interesting. All right, well, I'll make use of that and be able to use it just as it's sort of dropped. I think that adventure paths generally provide a really wide range of loot, and unless there's something specific that your character build needs, like a Solarian weapon crystal, you could probably just do just fine with the equipment that drops, the armor, the weapons, the other gear, and I tend to make use of that. I also feel like I'm getting a little more value when I do that, because you could sell stuff at 10%, but you'd have to, I'd have to find 10 of these things in order to get, to be able to buy one. I might as well use the one I just found. And even if it's, I don't know, 2d8 sonic damage instead of 2d10 cold damage, right? Yeah, they're about equivalent from my thinking, and yeah, might as well just make use of it. So personally, if I'll just end up with sort of what we've got. The from an adventure writer's perspective, though, there is a lot more math that goes into it. The math is a lot more loose than I think anybody wants to know. Because we end up listing everything out as an adventure author for an AP, standalone, anything like that. I'll list everything out that is given in the adventure. And then I will put a second column that is either that item at full value, if it's something that I feel like the characters are going to use, or at 1/10 value if I think it's something the characters are going to sell. And whether or not something counts as a thing characters will use or a thing characters will sell, you know, it's more art than science. Sort of, well, if it's about the same, whatever it is, if it's about the same level that the characters are, they're probably going to keep it because it's kind of good. If it's higher level than the characters are, they're going to keep it. But if it's something that does healing or maybe even some low-level grenades, they'll probably keep them just because they're useful to have around instead of selling off every single last stick of inventory. And then when you sort of add up the two columns, you'll get a sense of how much wealth the adventure gives out, and that ought to line up to the wealth by level expectations. But that can swing really heavily if I've decided that, for example, this 12th level item is something that the players are going to keep versus something the players are going to sell. 90% of the value of a high level item can really swing those numbers one way or the other. So I don't know, maybe we get, I haven't heard that there's any particular adventure path that is known to be too frugal with its rewards. Oh, this one doesn't give out enough treasure. You're going to have to add more GMs whenever you run it. So we must be doing something kind of right.
Yeah, no, I actually, all the APs I've played or GM'd, and that's five of them now for Starfinder, hasn't been that big of a deal. And I think, you know, for a lot of characters, they're not specifically, there's not like one piece of gear you absolutely have to have to make that character work. There are some pieces of gear that are nicer to have, but like you're saying, it's almost like you, as you're playing the game, you would kind of just adapt your character to whatever gear dropped and use that and see it, you know, okay, this is great. And so what, I'm level 6, and I'm using a level 3, you know, pistol or whatever, that's fine. Armor seems a little bit more level specific though. It seems like, because things are hitting you harder as you get higher level, having armor closer to your level seems to be more important than a weapon, because there's so many other things that kind of go into the weapon damage calculation.
Well, I think that's right, but I've been, maybe I've been really lucky. It's been the case with me that the groups that I play with are very collegial about sharing that kind of stuff. Oh, we've got this, we found this armor. All right, well, look, I'm the operative. I hang out at the fringes of the fight, and I rarely get close enough for anybody to fight me. Why doesn't somebody that's up closer to the front lines take it? Oh, you can take heavy armor, but you can't. You can only take light armor. All right, well, maybe you should get this one, and then we'll swap the old armor you had. I'll take, and you know, so on. So this, we're, I guess you could say the way that you would kind of min-max a character, you can kind of min-max an armor drop as well to make sure that your party uses it to its most effectiveness. I don't see that happen a lot with armor with weapons or other gear. I see that exact thing happen a lot more often with armor. Which is, I think, fits exactly with what you're saying. Armor tends to be something that's more important to stay at level or close to it.
Now, the interesting thing from the panel, it was kind of the Starfinder designers panel. It was Joe Pacini, John Compton, and Jason Tondreau were in there.
Okay.
And so the thing that they mentioned about loot was that the AP books in particular actually have more loot in them than the calculations by level would typically generate. And they didn't say, because the reason that you mentioned, they said because the players might not find all the loot. And so you want to have some extra just in case they don't find some of it, so they find an appropriate amount. Is that something you think about, or is that just peripheral defense?
No, that is something that I have heard said, but my experience is there is not an awful lot of loot that goes unfound. Mm-hmm. And here's why. If you're in an adventuring area where you've got these, let's say you're in an urban area and you've got these five tasks to do, well, you're going to go do all five tasks, and any treasure that would come out of the five tasks, you're going to get. Sometimes you might be, all right, well, here's five tasks, you only have to do four of them. And maybe whatever that last one is, maybe you'd miss. But players tend to be, all right, well, let's do it anyway, right? You get into a dungeon that's got 10 rooms, for example. When I say dungeon, of course, I mean an abandoned space station or a derelict spaceship. You know, there's a lot of different, dungeon means a lot of different things in Starfinder. But if you've got sort of 10 rooms in the thing and you've got five areas you've got to go through to get to the end boss or whatever reason you're in this dungeon in the first place, very few players are going to go through the five rooms, get to the end boss and say, and that's it, we're done, we leave. There's almost always going to be all right, well, let's look in these other rooms. Or if people aren't very careful to go every single room all the way through, which I think most groups are, there's sort of a sense by the end that they'll be like, look, we've got this dungeon all figured out. We've killed all the significant enemies here. We just go through, we check the rest of it. And I've seen plenty of GMs say, oh, you're right. Oh, okay, well, there's this room over here. You know, there's a fight that is not going to pose a problem to you guys. And they've got, you know, two screamer grenades. So go ahead and write down two screamer grenades. It's sort of hand wavy to give you the rest of the treasure. I don't think any GM is looking at the treasure in an AP and thinking, how do I not give this to my characters? They want to give it out. And so I think the idea that you might miss some is maybe overstated.
Well, that was kind of my thinking as well. It's like, you know, players seem to be completionists. It's like they have been trained to know that there typically is a significant reason to have rooms, and the likelihood that something might be in a room they skipped, you know, is greater than 50%.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. You know,
so might as well do it. So I thought that was an interesting argument. So that's kind of how things are working. Now, this is the beef I have with this. Okay.
Alrighty.
And it's not so much how loot is given out. It's more what you can do with it. There's this really neat system in Starfinder where you can make things with UPBs.
Right.
Right. You can use your engineering skill and you can make things with UPBs. And, you know, if you gave players tons and tons of UPBs, they can make everything that they would want. And sometimes you'll see UPBs and you'll say, oh, you got 3,000 UPBs. That sounds like a lot, but when you're at eighth level, that doesn't even get you a weapon.
Right. That's not very much. Yeah.
So I guess what I would like to see is a mechanic where maybe you could take your existing things that you have a system for breaking them down back to the UPBs, the individual components, so that then you could reconfigure them to the things you want. Even if it's at the 10%, you get so much miscellaneous stuff like in our APs, you know, we'll have spreadsheets. Here's all the stuff we found that just stays on the ship and someday we'll liquidate it and do something. Well, what if you could instead say, you know what? We have 50 of these darn arc pistols. We don't really need them, but you know, our soldier would like a couple of high level grenades. Why don't we do that? You know, how come that mechanic, I guess, isn't? That's a mechanic I would like to see. So that's part A. And then part B, oftentimes you have a certain level of a piece of equipment, so armor or weapon, and you level up, and it would be really neat rather than having to get rid of that whole thing to, again, take UPBs and upgrade that to the next higher level. Something like that.
That's exactly the kind of thing that people have been asking for since we mentioned a level equivalent of the game. They'll sometimes go one further than that. They'll say, look, sure, I've got this zero pistol that does cold damage and I'm a fourth level character. And, you know, I shoot my pistol. It's great. When I get to ninth level, which is when the next break for that pistol is, I want my pistol to just get better, right? I want this to be my cold pistol, and I don't want to have to worry about stuff or gear. Even give me less treasure if you want, but I want my gear to level up as I level up. And I think there's something to that. I think some robust rules around that are probably something that would be really interesting. You certainly don't see, you know, Han Solo taking a tote full of stormtrooper gear and dumping it out and saying, all right, now what can we sell this for or make this out of to get myself a cooler vest, right? That just doesn't happen. So instead, no, he's got his pistol. Chewbacca's got the bowcaster that Wookiees mm-hmm. use. And it's always kind of good. No matter how much adventuring they do, it's always just the right amount of good for the adventure. It's the same level that they are. Why can't those mm-hmm. things kind of go up automatically? I feel like there's something to that. I think that your position of I want to be able to improve it and I'm willing to spend money to improve it is a little more realistic. And maybe for that reason, more workable.
Well, and then having this UPB system, which in every single game I play in, gets virtually no use.
Yeah. And it's one of the most useful things you can do with engineering. But mm-hmm. I feel like so many people are trained to, all right, well, I see, you know, we open the chest and inside there are gold pieces. What can I trade my gold pieces for? That the mm-hmm. idea of UPBs and doing something with them, building something out of your gold pieces or returning an item to its base number of gold pieces is just not mm-hmm. something that enters into the usual player's calculus about what to do with how to treat treasure.
Yeah. And so I've been thinking that, you know, I'm going to work on a homebrew and I'm going to have a different crafting system and a different kind of economy in that regard, you know? So those are the two things I want to have be able to happen. Basically, you can break down things to their core components and reuse them, maybe at a discount, right? Because there's some loss in there. And enable players to level up their gear by, again, using some of your crafting, either, you know, mystical crafting or engineering type crafting. I think those are the things. If I were to make things more fun for players, which is the whole goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you have in here, I think those things would make a huge difference. You know, I was thinking about back in the day when we first started playing D&D, and it was always really exciting to get or find that exactly cool piece of gear that you would love to use that, you know, fit your character perfectly. And for a character to be able to save up and do things and to be able to create the things that they want, I think just really, really rounds out what the character can do so much more besides, oh, we go into battle, we have some skill things. You know, now you have kind of planning your strategy for what you're going to do for upgrading gear. You know, like you kind of do that for upgrading your starship. Why not your other stuff?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's so funny, the things that players will attach themselves to. I've got a personal example in 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons. I've been playing an online 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons game for many, many years now. And my character kept getting, right early levels, I kept getting knocked over by dumb stuff, right? Here's an environmental effect. All right, well, you know, my defense was poor enough that I just got knocked over. Here's a creature like a wolf that trips you, and I keep getting tripped. These stupid things always knock me. We found a pair of what are called acrobat boots, just a level 2 item. They let you stand up as a minor action instead of as a move action. And man, I love those things. And now we find, like, you know, I don't know, 20-somethingth level, and we find these awesome magical boots. And I'm like, no, I'm going to keep my old level 2 boots that let me stand up. They have become very important to how my character looks. Every single time I get knocked over, I'm quick to point out, well, because I have my acrobat boots, I'm able to stand up more quickly. And I think there are, in the game, there are better versions of those boots. We just haven't found any. But being mm-hmm. able to keep better versions of those silly acrobat boots would make me feel like I was keeping maybe pace a little bit. It made me feel less bad about giving up higher level boots if I had higher mm-hmm. level versions of the boots I'd come to love as this character. So mm-hmm. I think you're onto something there.
Well, and so that was kind of my thinking about, you know, where I would like loot to go. And I don't know, it seems like the economy in Starfinder is really well tightly balanced around that 10%, that if you know, you can bump that up to 20% by doing certain things in society play. I imagine the same thing in AP or in a homebrew, you know, you could have the GM allow certain things with a quest or a mission or good role play to bump that up some.
Well, that, and you'll see that in some encounters in an AP anyway. It'll be like, well, go into this, you know, this crashed starship, please rescue my husband's remains. And then when you bring back the gear, it's like, oh, I'll give you 100% of the value of that gear because they're important to me, right? It's a sympathetic value, so you'll get full credit for this. Or, oh, if you sell it over here, then you get 50% rather than 10%. I mean, it's very situational, but it does happen.
Right. But I think that's limited, like you're saying, situational, because of concern for the balance, right? The balance of equipment with player abilities and things like that, which I think is actually really good in Starfinder. You know, I've only played, you know, the highest level characters I have in Society play are level 13. We have yet to play above level 13. I don't know how that balance sits at the higher levels. I'm really excited to see that when we go into Devastation Arc later this year, to see how that balance continues to feel as you get to, you know, 14, 15, all the way up to 20. Right. Do you have any sense for how that is?
For how, well, I don't know. I have way better information about the last of the Devastation Arc Adventures. By now I maybe should have read the other ones, but I've still got some time.
All right. But I mean, when you're giving out rewards and things like that and equipment in that last book that you've written there, does it feel like a good balance for the high level play though?
Yes, right. Because the kind of things that are that level are just the weirdly impossible things, right? So, oh, here's your disintegration hoop that will absolutely and permanently destroy anything that you stick in the hoop, right? You know, that's the kind of thing that, even though it mechanically is the level 20 treasure of level 20 value, and that's no different than a level 19 character finding that, than a level 4 character finding a level 5 item, but it just feels more dramatically high level. And that's the important thing that that's the important feel of high level, is that the stuff feels high level. And a lot of that work has already been done because the equipment feels appropriately high level.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking like the cost of, you know, something at 20th level, if that's like a 20th level artifact, you know, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of thousands of credits for something like that, you know. And like when you find cred sticks now, I'm guessing it's in the tens of thousands rather than in the hundreds, you know, that we're finding at lower
levels. But that's just, I mean, that's just the math upgrade, right? I mean, it becomes a little bit, the economy sort of looks really silly anyway, right? Because you're thinking to yourself, all right, well, okay, we're 18th level, we're going to go into this place for 18th level character. Let's bring along a second level person. And the very first piece of loot we find that we like, man, this is garbage, we don't want it, we give it to the second level person. And they are set for life. They're rich beyond the dreams of avarice because they've gotten what is cast off to an 18th level character.
You know, that actually reminds me, I used to play this game, Neverwinter Nights. It was by BioWare. I don't know if you're familiar
I've seen
with it.
It, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, basically it uses the D&D 3.5 rules to build.
Okay.
And so I actually ran a Persistent World server for a bunch of years. We had hundreds of players on it. And that's one of the things everybody would do. They would twink their characters, right? So you get a character up to super high level, and there was no level limits on gear. So then you get a new character to start out. You would drop all your old gear that you don't need at max level. And so your first level characters are just start out stacked. And so you'd have, some things had level limits, but so you'd have, okay, here's my gear for level 1 to 5. Here's my 1 to 10. Here's, you know, 10 to 20 or whatever. And you would just like drop it off of that character, transfer it over and do it. It made it, so we were in this particular server, after we rebuilt it, we went up to level 40. So you could level up your character to level 40 in like 2 days.
Oh, because of all the great stuff you'd start with.
All you could do. And there were some really big challenges for these level 40 characters and things. And so basically what myself and a bunch of other players did, we would just try different builds. I literally, you know, made like maybe 60 or 70 different character builds just to see how to min-max things to, you know, try to solo a certain boss or things like that. And you'd get the perfect gear on the server for doing that. And it was interesting. You know, it's almost like having a kind of like a practice server you know, where you can test out different things, mm-hmm. but we would do it in real time with the game.
Because of the way that the gear right. you would get. I had a little bit of the opposite experience I think it was Mass Effect 2, maybe mm-hmm. one of those, another BioWare game, where I had gone through most of the game and then I found the sort of smuggler planet. I'd known about the smuggler planet from the beginning, but I'm like, oh, let me go. I'm almost won the game. Let me go to the smuggler planet. And all these smugglers had rocking good gear, kind of just sitting around in the crates that they had. And so I got some of this good gear. It was pretty good stuff. And I went on to win the game. And then I thought, okay, I want to play it again. And when I went through the second time, I'm like, ah, I know those smugglers have just awesome gear. So as soon as I can, I'm going to go. And I paid attention to how I could sneak up to one of the crates and not actually fight any of the impossibly difficult smugglers at my low level. And so I snuck in, and every time I get spotted, I would just restart my last save game because I knew I couldn't survive the fight. But right. I finally snuck in, opened up the chest, and it was no good stuff. I'm like, what? This stuff isn't any good. And then I got jumped by some of the smugglers, and rather than restore the game, I just fought them, and I beat them. I'm like, wait a minute. All their stuff is exactly set to whatever level I am.
Oh, wow.
The only reason it was super tough the first time I went through is because I did it last. Now that I'm doing it first, it's just as appropriate for me. And I felt like that, the reason I've remembered that years later is because I felt like it really kind of cheapened the feel of the game.
Yeah.
That everything was sort of artificially set to whatever level I am. Everything was level appropriate, no matter what I did. So, I don't know. I feel like your experience opened some gameplay to you that you didn't have before, right? We can play with this loot that's way beyond our capability, and that really opens a different kind of gameplay. Whereas my experience with the only level appropriate loot is like, well, damn, I hate that.
mm-hmm. Well, and it really extended the lifetime. You know, so this game, even at the time we were playing it, had been out like probably 5 years or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people were playing on the server 10 years past that. And I'd see people, you know, I actually ran the server, you know, out of my office for a long time, out of my garage. And I'd pop in every once in a while just to see. And I'd see the same players I'd seen there 15 years earlier, trying new builds, doing new things.
Oh, that's neat. That's really neat.
And then we had a couple of developers that would come in and like every 5 or 6 years, would do a major expansion of super high level gear and super high level challenges to kind of match up with these now min-max characters people had made, you know, trying to, it's the constant arms race.
Right,
you know,
right.
That we would have in there. And I think that nobody, you know, the goal was always to find, can you make a character that can solo the entire server?
And, oh, wow.
And you couldn't, nobody could, as far as I know, nobody ever did it. You would make characters that could solo certain areas to get really good gear so that then you could put it on another character. One of the things that eventually happened is all the higher level gear, you could not transfer to your low levels. They did something.
Prevent exactly the thing you were doing.
Right. And so we would, I don't remember the workaround, but it was like you had to bring a low level character into that gear to pick it up themselves. And so I had two computers. I made my, you know, my high level cleric with implosion that basically could instantly, you know, implode anything in a certain area. I bring in my low level character. My high level character would take it all out. Low level character would pick up the gear and boom, it would be geared for that particular thing. So if you wanted to do it without having a big party, because people's schedules and things, then you had to make a character that could solo all the areas you wanted gear. And that was actually a really fun exercise then, you know, because you'd have to have all these different classes and figure out how to perfect them for a particular boss.
I see. So. But that becomes a whole unexpected part of the gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, so I guess that's a really good takeaway from this. The way that you handle loot in the game can really open up new avenues of types of play that you might never have thought about before.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the issues I have with loot in games is sometimes GMs will feel that, oh, you know what? you're not getting the right kind of loot that you want, or you're not getting enough. And I've had this happening in one of the APs I'm playing. I haven't read it, so I don't know if it's written in. But basically, the GM says, oh, you come in here, and then you have a X amount of credits, and you can have anything you want in here up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems really artificial. After we're done, I'm going to go back and look and see if that's how it's written. It's very strange, though. I've never seen that in any of the APs before.
Well, we have some of the stuff I've done with that. Now that I think about it, I wonder whether or not this survived going through the development process, was to say, this is this kind of weapon, right? But, and I say right there in the text, if a different kind of weapon is going to thrill your characters, your players more, change it to this other kind of weapon. It's not so, it's something the players find, the characters find. It's not something that they fight against a villain that has it, because then it would change all the numbers around, right?
Right.
What type of energy damage they did and so on. It's just a thing they find. But my idea was, look, if you've got some cooler level 11 weapon in mind, make it that thing. Don't make it this, mm-hmm. because that will make your players feel like they've come across something special.
And I think that's a great way to do it. And I guess this is my complaint about this particular GM, is it's just kind of like, you know, lazy GMing, right? You go to a place, they have everything imaginable that you would want, and you're given a credit limit of, at this point, was enough basically to get high-level armor, high-level weapon, several fusions. You know, basically, you could load up on anything you wanted up to your level. And that seemed, honestly, that really seemed to cheapen all the gear that we got.
Well, do you have a sense that maybe you get it, then give it to a lower level character that you're playing for the thought of soloing them? Okay.
Yes, that's what we're going to do after we finish this particular book now. And the thing is, I think this is actually in one of the books you wrote. So if you don't recall this, then...
I don't. It could be. That sounds like something that I might do. I know because I think I might have written, I had a really good experience in a game I was playing where we were rewarded with, it basically go to town and buy anything that's 20,000 GP or less, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted was less than half that amount. It was a Rod of Wonder I otherwise couldn't mm-hmm. find. I'm like, oh, I want a Rod of Wonder more than anything. My super chaotic character got exactly mm-hmm. the thing I wanted. And it has been nothing but pranks ever since with that silly Rod of Wonder. And I love it. So knowing that there are other people who may have the idea of, you know, there's this thing I want that I never actually find. Trying to put something in saying, this is your opportunity to get the one thing you want, but you haven't been able to find.
I think one thing is great. This was like, you know, okay, you can fill all your armor slots with all the things you want. You can get all the fusions up to the level this is like you're given, you know, a Visa Black card and you can go shopping, you know?
And you get to keep it all afterward? Is that...
That's what it seemed. Huh. This is very strange. This isn't the final book of a particular AP, so you probably know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
Now.
Yep.
And it was, there's a shopping situation in there.
I think that might be right, because there's no reason for the people involved to be anything less than, let's give you the best we absolutely have.
Yeah.
Because you're about to do something important. That does sound like it's a little broader. I have had one of my favorite adventures to write was for Pathfinder was Dreams of the Yellow King, where it takes place, basically the whole thing takes place in the Dreamlands, which is, mm-hmm. it's sort of hard to say it's all a dream. It's actually much more menacing than that. But mm-hmm. none of the stuff you get, you keep. And so like you're ninth level characters and one of the first pieces of loot you can come across is a Vorpal sword that somebody stuck in a closet someplace. You don't have to fight anybody to get it. You open around, you look at this closet, and there's a Vorpal sword. And I've heard plenty of people say, that's the point at which I knew we were not going to be able to keep all this stuff. You don't.
All right. Well, lots of different ways to handle loot. And, you know, it seems like some structure has to be in place depending on the balance of the authors, the developers. But in a homebrew, this is where I think we have a lot more flexibility. And I think Starfinder lends itself to do a lot more than what we can do now. And so that's what I would like to do in my own writing. But I also hope that something like this can become actually pervasive in organized play, because mm-hmm. that's where I see really tight economics for things.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that would be better to be able to see. And they're always, organized play is always finessing their rules a little bit and how the campaign plays. They've got a real tight sense. The tightrope they walk is, we don't want people to learn a whole lot of extra rules other than what they have to learn, but we continually want to improve the play experience for everybody who's in the campaign.
And I think that makes sense. And I think this is something, you know, I think it's great. They start really tight. It's easier to loosen the reins later than to, you know, I've played in games where the economies have gotten completely wrecked mm-hmm. and they got to wipe everything out. And I'm glad they didn't start at that situation and have to clear the books, you know, that way.
Yeah, I think that, yes. Yeah, and I wonder whether or not some sort of book clearing is helpful. That is to say, and this is obviously I'm speaking more home game wise, to be able to kind of lay out to people, this is kind of a fundamental underpinning, but I'm changing it to make it better, what I think is better. Right? I'm changing it to be different, right? And what I hope is better for my whole campaign going forward. And I've known plenty of people when they get a house rule like that that really works, mm-hmm. No matter how many campaigns they run of Starfinder, it always works that way. And that becomes something that is really a really attractive draw about the style of game that they run. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly not going to help with kind of an organized play or an AP perspective, but it's something that I think everybody could consider for a home game.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.